You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Tyler Barstow. He's the co-founder of Vinyl Me Please Record Club, or I should say the best damn record club out there. Tyler,
exactly.
Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Let's jump right into Vinyl Me Please. I found that record club just as a person who enjoys music, enjoys vinyl, and have really loved what you guys are sending out. How did that come about? How did the company get formed? What was your involvement there?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. It all started maybe 3 years ago in Chicago. I was living there at the time working at a tech startup with the other co-founder, Matt. That's sort of how we got connected. And so we ended up talking music all the time in the office. We both grew up just probably to an unhealthy degree obsessed with music. And we started trading bands that we really liked and things like that. And then we like really quickly transitioned into sort of, I got to play this album. And we would just play the whole album in the office. And then you'd be like, well, I got to play you this album. He'd play the whole album in the office. And sort of going back and forth like that. And he had come from like a pretty strong background in vinyl. His dad actually had like a collection, I think it was like 3,000 records or something. And even at one point, I think his dad had made him go through and sort of like rip all them to CD back when that was like a thing that people were doing a lot more often to save their collection. So he went through every single record. So he had spent quite a bit of time with vinyl records. I had not. I didn't have any vinyl, actually, when we started Vinyl Me Please. But we started talking, I guess, through that whole process, we started talking about the way that people listen to music and how we really loved albums, like complete albums. And those were the things that we came back to the most in music and wanting people to sit down, you know, like, I don't know if like in, like when I, we were in high school or, you know, growing up, we'd always want to like get our, we'd always want our friends to sit down and listen to something and want them to really love the artists that we loved. And so, we felt like there was something really important about, listening to an album, like really great albums all the way through as the way that you digest, a musician's work. And since that's the way that they put it together in the first place and intended to be listened to. So that's what got us, I guess, thinking about, you know, what happened to vinyl clubs, because we wanted, at that point, we just wanted to join one, and see if they were still around. Both of our dads had been in record clubs growing up, and had really enjoyed it, and they seemed really cool. And we started looking around and we couldn't really find one that we really liked. And so we decided, just as like a hobby to start our own out of our apartment in downtown Chicago. So we spent a few months getting a website together, and reaching out to artists and people that we thought, we'd love to work with for the first few months, and ended up launching January 1st of 2013.
That's exciting. You know, and I also grew up in a similar way. I was listening to albums. Friends would get together, we'd come over and sometimes do kind of marathon sessions and you know, in my room, and just listening to, you know, several albums by one band or whatever. And I like the idea of just the kind of narrative quality of an album. And you know, I remember even when I started playing digital stuff on online or off iTunes, it was upsetting me that sometimes the album would be shuffled and I had to, you know, figure out how to make it not be shuffled because I wanted
yeah, exactly.
As it was intended to play.
Right.
So yeah, it's a great listening experience. So let's talk about how did that happen. So then you start the club. How do you go about finding an artist and pressing vinyl? What is that process?
Yeah, no. Well, I guess the most honest answer is that it's very complicated, but it got complicated over time. I mean, we launched, we had 12 customers, and at that time we were not doing exclusive pressings. Matt and I bootstrapped the whole company. We each put in $500, which was all the money that we had to our names pretty much at the time. And we were buying, out of the artist catalogs. You know, we got catalogs from distributors, much like a record store does, I assume. And so we had this criteria at the beginning, which is, I mean, it's very subjective, obviously. I mean, and we put a ton of work into the way that we pick records, especially now, which, you know, I can certainly go through later. But at the time, it was just the bands that we really loved. So the first record we ran was Langhorne Slim and the Law, the record The Way We Move. And then after that, we ran a record from Japan Droids, and, you know, on and on, just records that we thought were sort of stood up to at least the two of ours criteria for being worthy of sitting down and listening to all the way through. And so we just started reaching out to, we reached out to Langhorne Slim's record label and said, hey, we want to buy 12 records. Cause we only had 12 customers in the first month. And we said, we'd like to buy 12 records. And then they showed up. We used to hand wrap them, and like this really cool, black like craft paper, and then we would wrap them in twine and write all of our customers handwritten notes. I used to sometimes like kind of get drunk and draw them cartoons and stuff as well. So we just wanted to make it feel like your best friend had sent you a record that they really wanted you to listen to. And so we did that. I mean, we grew it like that, where we would pick records that way and order them just out of the whatever stock that the artist had.
And that was all vinyl then, that you were mm-hmm. shipping.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then also at that time, right now, like these days we had this music newsletter that goes out every week. But at that time, we actually used to do custom playlists for all our customers. So if you'd been a customer then, like I would have talked to you about music, you know, 15 or 20 minutes a month. Just what you were into like that month or what you wanted to have on your playlist. And then I would go and make you like a 20 song playlist and send it to you as well. So it was pretty labor intensive, but it was a lot of fun.
I bet those first customers must miss that kind of, I mean, I know that kind of kept up, but it must've been wonderful for those guys. They must miss that a little bit now too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, totally. I've had a few customers that we've had since the beginning that will email me sometimes and just say, hey, can you make me a playlist again, please? I just miss it. So yeah, it was a fun time.
And so then what was the next stage where it grew into you pressing vinyl? How did that transition take place?
Yeah, that's a great question. Essentially there was a limit there was a number of customers that we hit where that ended up being possible. And so so the first year of the company, we grew word of mouth only, up to about 300 customers by the end of the year. And so that was when it was still a hobby of ours. But then around February of the next year, we had hit like 500 people, and that was the threshold for us to start, pressing our own. And so I think the first record we pressed that was an exclusive Vinyl Me Please version was an album from a punk band out of Nashville called Diarrhea Planet, which is we got a lot of emails from some of our older customers being like, why are you sending me a record that's from a band called Diarrhea Planet? But a lot of people ended up really liking it. But that was the first one. It was just a numbers thing. Once we had a big enough order, the labels started letting us do a lot of exclusive stuff, and they've been all exclusive since then.
So how does that work? You call a label and, you know, who's still, in pressing vinyl or CDs or working with that band, and you ask them if you can press a limited edition of vinyl and work out some kind of licensing agreement. Is that how it happens?
Yeah, we usually go directly through through the label and whoever they work with from a pressing plant perspective. And then we also, you know, we work as closely with the artists as we possibly can. I mean, so, you know, we've grown quite a bit. So, you know, we just, the February feature that we had was the new Father John Misty record that just came out, I Love You Honey Bear. And, you know, we ordered 10,000 of those. And so, you know, we placed that order 6 months ago. But we, you know, we work directly with Josh. His wife did the artwork, the custom artwork for us this month, and he did the cocktail pairing and also did a little thing for like insert that he drew for our members and stuff. And so like that conversation with them was, you know, we called his label and said, we're obsessed with this new record and we really would love to work with you guys on putting together something really special. We order about 6 months out now, and we do that so that we have time, not just for that amount of records to be pressed at their plant, but also so that we can get the artists involved and get a lot of really cool stuff included in the package for our customers.
Yeah, that's one of the albums that I'm most excited about. I mean, I've liked everything that I've gotten from you guys so far, but I'm really excited about that and the package and the double clear vinyl, 45. When you press the vinyl, just to talk about some technical things, are you always pressing it in the same plant, or are they actually pressed at different manufacturers?
Yeah. So right now, that's a great question. Right now, they're pressed. It's a little bit convoluted, as you can imagine, just because there are some labels that are now open to us licensing them, like licensing the records and pressing them ourselves at plants that we find. Like we're great friends with the folks over at Fat Possum, and they just opened a plant, you know, and so it's possible, like going forward at some point, that we've worked with them on some of their own artists, but, you know, maybe we'll license something and press it at their plant or another plant that we're friends with. But I mean, each label, you know, especially a lot of the bigger labels are very strict about where their records are pressed. There's a long process for them to approve pressing plants. So for the most part, we go through whichever pressing plant or /plant that they've approved. And we work directly kind of in their comfort zone from that perspective. And so far, from like a quality control perspective, we haven't had like any massive issues yet. You know, obviously, in shipping out that many records, and there's some percentage that will get bent in the mail. I mean, it used to be, as you've seen on our packaging, that for the love of music, please do not bend. But we've had you know, mailmen fold records in half to fit them in people's mailboxes and all sorts of strange things. So you know, with the shipping stuff, like from a quality perspective, so far all of our shipments have held up really well, and we replace anything that gets messed up in the mail, of course. But all the plants that we've worked with have been really, really good so far. So there haven't been any complaints as far as that goes. So
and how is I mean, you know, types of vinyl. You know, it used to be like 180 gram is the best quality. What really is the best quality vinyl? I've always wondered. And does the fact that it's clear or color affect the sound? I mean, what is, and is that part of your thinking process? But what does it mean to have like the best piece of vinyl?
Yeah, man, you're asking great questions. That's, I think there's a lot of debate, I think, around like what the very best like format for vinyl is. I mean, we, at this point, we're trying to press as much as humanly possible in 180 gram, just because the heavier weight is, I mean, we like that. I think as far as like the kinds of vinyl, there's a lot about durability for vinyl that also has to do with the setup that you're playing it on. You know, like what kind of needle you use or record player and all the, and whether it's calibrated well, and even how you treat the vinyl when you're storing it and things like that. So, like, it's a sort of a complicated thing as far as like how long is your vinyl going to last, and in what formats and things like that. And there's a lot that seems like it, what has to do with the sort of the upkeep and maintenance of the vinyl. But I guess to answer your question, like it seems like there's a lot of back and forth around like what you should press in. But we tend to gravitate towards 180 gram whenever we can. Every once in a while, there's, like, because we everything we do now has to be exclusive, and so like sometimes we will press in 120 instead of 180 if they've just done a 180 gram, or the artist doesn't want to do a different variation of the 180 gram that they've already done or something like that. But in general, that's what we push for.
So to talk about the Father John Misty Honey Bear, how did you make the choice to press in clear vinyl, press two discs, playing at 45 RPM?
Great question. Yeah, they the special edition LP that they put out as well is also in 45. I think they wanted it to be that way. And as far as the clear vinyl, we got to see some of the like designs that they were doing for the other special editions, that for their pre-order stuff that they were doing, and things like that. And so I've been looking through all that and talking with their label and Josh. They, I guess both parties were sort of in agreement that Clear Vinyl would be like very cool and also a lot different from anything else that they were working on. And so there just wouldn't be any sort of overlap there.
And is the sound quality different on Clear Vinyl? Does that make any difference at all?
I don't think so. I mean, I imagine we could, I mean, I have that. We have the test pressings at the house and it sounds amazing. And I'm not just saying that because I want that to be true. I mean, it sounds amazing. I think there's probably, there are certainly probably people in the world that would say that Clear Vinyl sounds different or that clear white vinyl is like softer or, you know, the grade's a little bit faster, but so far, I mean, we've pressed on Clear Vinyl, before, and we haven't had any issues with it and people have really enjoyed it. And so, yeah, for us, it was just, or actually we haven't pressed on Clear Vinyl before. We're pressing on Clear Vinyl again very soon. So sorry about that.
Is this the first one that you've pressed running at 45? I mean, everything's been 33 so far, hasn't it?
Yeah. This is the first 45 that we've put out, as far as I can remember.
Why 45? What is the reason for 45?
To be honest with you, I'm not sure. Like me personally, I'm not sure. That would be a great question for Cameron, our marketing guy, who's probably from a technical perspective the biggest like vinyl nut on the team. I think a lot of these questions are probably like as much as I know about like just from the hardware side of stuff, like just from the technical stuff. I don't know everything there is to know about vinyl around some of this stuff. So I'm sorry if some of my answers like that answer isn't all that interesting to you.
That's okay. It's you know, I mean, 45. The other day, you know, my wife just like she likes to just pull an album out sometimes and say play this because as opposed to what do you want to listen to and everything else, and she pulled out an album by a band called We. I don't know if you know those guys. It was their first album. It wasn't Square Root of Negative One. It was before that, and it's a double album, and they both play it at 45. I mean, they're DJs and sound artists, so they used to tell me, you know, you can play it at 33, 45, whatever you want to do. But obviously, it was made for 45, and seems to sound great at that. I don't know whether there is a difference or not, but it's a nice
way
well, to
I know
play
that
an
we've,
album.
We've,
you know?
Well, oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I guess what Cam has said and what some of the other people that we've talked to have said is just, especially on like, you know, really nice audio setups, like, you know, that, you know, audiophiles, and you may have a really awesome setup, and we have a lot of customers who are audiophiles and like have really great home systems and stuff. And what I've heard is that 45s just sound a little bit better. And if you have a system to tell the difference between a 33 and a 45, that's sensitive enough to the difference, then that 45 sounds a little bit better. So,
right. I'm not an audiophile that way. I don't have quite that kind of setup. I'd love to. I mean, I have like a Technique 1200 turntable from being a DJ, but but the speakers aren't incredible. You know, it sounds beautiful to me, but it's by no means a high end, you know, tens of thousands of dollars kind of audiophile setup. And I've seen those, like those, you know, I don't know what those turntables are. A friend of mine just posted on Facebook the other day those $3,000 turntables with like the 2-inch thick clear platter. Have you ever seen those? I don't know.
No, I haven't, but that sounds awesome.
Oh my God, it's gorgeous, right? And you can't just buy a turntable from these guys. Every turntable is customized depending on what you listen to, but it's just it's kind of amazing. So
that's incredible. Yes. No, and that's something, I mean, you know, we're in talks right now with a lot of like really cool, like high end audio companies. As you've seen, we have a members only store and we're in talks with a lot of different folks about getting some really nice stuff in that isn't going to break the bank, but some really high quality stuff into our store as well for our folks. Just so, you know, as people are able, if they have a home system that they want to start upgrading some, that they can do that through us if they'd like, which I think is going to be pretty cool. So
that is cool, because one question that I'm still stuck on is what's the best vinyl cleaner? You know, I have something kind of like a disc washer, but are those, it's really the best thing to have one of those $300 spin doctor things, or what do you use?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I think it's, vinyl is a little bit, well, vinyl, as you, vinyl is like this hobby that, like, the more you get into it, like, the more it takes over your life. It's kind of this thing where I think, you know, we've especially, you know, we've got customers that are at almost every level that's possible for collecting vinyl. You know, some of our folks have, you know, a $20,000 or $30,000 set up at their house, and other people just have, you know, some computer speakers that they manage with an adapter to plug into their turntable, and sort of everything in between. And for us, I think it's like we've got a few guides together for people for around gear and things like that. But it's really, I mean, every, like, as soon as you get something really nice, even for vinyl, there's always something a little bit nicer. I mean, like, there's people, you know, you can buy just a needle for your turntable that's like, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And so we've been trying to put together guides around things that, like, here's a turntable for $200 that's good, or $100. Here's a turntable at $300 or $400 that's great, that kind of stuff. And we're building out gear reviews around these different price points and each of these different things. Like, if you have $50, here's what you should buy to clean your turntable. If you have $100 or $200 or $300, that kind of stuff. I mean, I was just on the phone with one of our customers the other night, and they called to ask a question about the Father John Misty record. And they were saying that they had just called a vinyl repair man to come to their house and, like, repair some of their records. And to be honest, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, I didn't know you could pay somebody to come and, like, fix small defects and things in your records. But I guess that's a thing. So it's really, as much as you want to get into, like, there's always, I think at every echelon, there's like a little bit better product you probably could have or process. And it just depends on how much you want to do. I don't mean that as like a non-answer. It's just kind of depends, I guess.
Right. It depends on budget. So you personally, mm-hmm. what do you use to clean your records?
If I need any records cleaned, honestly, I just take them over. So Cam, our marking guy, he lives three blocks from me. So if I need anything like fixed, I just take it over to his house and have him look at it. And so I just use, I guess, whatever he has, and I can definitely shoot you over that information, or his process for that as well, if that's something you'd like to add, or something like that.
Yeah. We'll add links to this. There's also links that the viewers can see, on the website where a lot of people go to hear this. Yeah, that could be to some of the, not only to the Vinyl Me Please website, but also to, to other material like that would be the more information, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is great talking to you. It seems like you're involved in a number of things. And before we end this and really just tell everybody how to get involved with the club, it seems like your background comes from a number of different things. Just to ask you a little bit about that. Your education essentially was in philosophy and writing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was actually, I was a classics major. I don't think there's a ton of us running around anymore. But I actually was I was a classics major with a focus in Greek. So I translated big portions of the Iliad and Plato and translated Antigone one semester. So I was like really like heavy into both the language side of classics and also the physics. And that's what I spent most of my time doing. And then we didn't have a creative, like per se, like a creative writing minor at my school, but I took pretty much every poetry class, both reading and creative writing side of poetry that I could in college. And that's something that I still do. I do the write-ups for the albums, but I also write a lot on the side. So that was, I mean, that's from an education perspective. Yeah, that's definitely my background.
And then you went into, you have experience in business development. After school, you got involved in, it seems, different online things, from, you know, Symantec to technology initiatives. I mean, why was that? What drove you into that area? I mean, I guess.
No, that's a great question. My dad, I grew up in a sort of a tech household. My dad was an entrepreneur who had started and sold a company, and my uncle had started and sold his company and was working at, he was a CTO for a long time at a company called Bandwidth out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And so, And so when I got out of college, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. My grandfather has been the head of the music department up at SUNY Oneonta for a very, very long time. And he was also a conductor and has done all sorts of things. So I sort of got my musical bug from him. That was sort of, from a music perspective, that like runs pretty deep in my family. My dad was a drummer in the 80s, for a number of bands, and he doesn't play anymore, but his friends' bands in college and things like that. But I think I sort of caught the most serious bug for music in the family. I think it kind of skipped a generation. But my dad and his brother, or one of his brothers, got really big into tech, and tech entrepreneurship and things like that. And so that's what I was raised under and what I always sort of imagined that I would do. But even after getting out of college, I always had this like kind of dream of wanting to work in music. But as you know, and as I know now, like that's saying you want to work in music is kind of an amorphous thing. And also can be a very difficult thing to actually do, depending on what it is that you want to do. And so it was just sort of this idea that I didn't pay as much attention to for a while. And I got involved in I learned computer programming and all that stuff and was thinking like that was the kind of stuff I was going to do going forward. And then this kind of came out of nowhere, and I'm really happy that this is what I do now instead.
It sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, just physically, you know, it sounds like a lot of fun. Computer programming is, I mean, it's also wonderful, but I guess that's something computer programming you picked up in between college and the jobs you were working on.
Yeah. And so I learned programming and then kind of figured that it sort of became clear that like I was good enough to like kind of make not I, to technically do it, but I think this sort of speaks some to your sort of some of the stuff we were talking about earlier with the technical side. Like for Vinyl Me Please, like I do a lot of our like business development and partnerships and I do our interviews and things like that. And so I'm just really passionate about music, and for Vinyl Me Please, my job is to kind of go and talk about music a lot with people and talk about, you know, what we're doing and things like that and find people to work with us. And so I think in the process of learning programming, things like that, it became more obvious that I think business development and things like that were more of a strong suit than sitting and coding for 10 hours a day. And I remember my uncle just saying, like, if you want to be good at this, you got to just do this all the time for a really long time. And I was just like, okay, well, I like it, but I don't think I like it enough for this to be my job. I don't think I would, you know, I just don't think I'm necessarily wired for that as much. So, yeah.
Well, what has come back is your writing. I mean, one of my favorite things about the club is obviously the record, but I began reading the newsletter more. And the reason I like the newsletter is because I like your writing, you know. It's not just the kind of run-of-the-mill writing, you know, even the first entry about, you know, what to do when you're on a plane. You know, it's hilarious. I was cracking up, and it's nice to see that, because even passionate writing about music can be, you know, it's someone's opinion, and I want to hear it. But to have that kind of humor and that kind of, in my mind, you know, irreverent attitude sometimes makes all the difference in the world.
Thanks, so, man. Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, because you know how it is. It's like we want it to feel like this, and it's not an affectation at all. It's just how we are, but it's kind of worked out well from just, you know, because I love writing that kind of stuff, and I'm just joking around a lot with people, but it's kind of, you know, at some level, you know, that like all of this on, you know, we have a really long, for instance, like we have a huge process for how we pick a record, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's what six or seven people all agreed on that we really, really like, you know, and we put them all the albums through a ringer, but it's like, we really love this record. And so, you know, like with the Father John Misty record, it's an incredible record. There's probably people in the world that don't like it, but we just get really psyched about the stuff that we pick and just go out and be psyched about it with people that love it and write about it. And, you know, I don't think there's ever a place that you arrive where you're just objectively right about everything, especially with music, but in any area of life, but especially music. And so it's kind of a fun line to walk, you know, where it's like, it's a little bit just kind of like, you know, just childish excitement about this stuff and less like, you know, this is the only band that's good and these other bands are really bad kind of thing, you know?
Right. Well, I'm glad you're doing that, because to me that's one of the, you know, one of the more exciting things about the club is that is your writing and how you're talking about the records and just introducing us to stuff, as well as just, you know, how you're thinking, because that is a difficulty, I think, for everyone. You know, a lot of times it seems to me everyone continues to listen to the music that they listened to in college and, you know, or,
right.
or earlier or whenever. How do you really get turned on to new bands and new music that you'll really like? You know, I don't know, all kinds of bands. And it's amazing that so much stuff isn't even, nobody even knows about them. I was talking
right.
to someone the other day about the band Apples and Stereo. Do you know these guys?
No,
Colorado,
I don't know.
I think. My God,
really?
Apples and, yeah, they're an amazing band that you know, have a great sound. It's one of these things where, you know, no matter how much you look and are out there, there's just, it seems to be an enormous amount of music, and how do we each access that or get access to that is hard. So it's nice that you have a kind of curated, is how I see it. You know, you guys are curating different groups of music, and I imagine that the seven people that you have are all coming from different perspectives. Is that the case?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've got all of us have come, like, there's a nice overlap for the core team. So the core team of I Know Me Please is four people. And then we have a couple, like, really great, like, music supervisors and people that, you know, we just chat with, and other people that are just super knowledgeable about music that kind of we use as, like, guardrails sometimes. It's just like, are we super off base right now, or is this album as amazing as we think it is, kind of stuff, you know? I mean, we definitely, and the way that we do it, you know, like, we organize by genre, and so, like, we want everybody over the course of a year to get 12 totally different, totally, really, like, really, really great records from us. And so to do that, you know, we're planned out through the rest of the year pretty much. I think we're still waiting to plan September and November, or we're waiting to finalize those orders. But, I mean, because of that, you know, we're thinking about it really far in advance, and there's a ton of candidates for each month that we sort of sift through and listen to as a team and argue about and go back and forth about and things like that. And so that's sort of the fun part of the curation and also the difficult part, and why I think we're really glad to have the customer store now, just because, you know, there's so many amazing records that are coming out and so many amazing records that have been released. Obviously, it's like an infinite, it feels infinite to me sometimes. And so, like, since we can only feature 12 records a year, like, as our monthly stuff, we now get to go in and feature another, you know, 100 records or something. And, like, these are also really, really great. Like, you know, we just had the new D'Angelo record in the store, the new Viet Cong record, or, I mean, the list goes on, or new Sleater Kenny, or, you know, all these records where it's like, you guys should also be listening to this, and, you know, you also should have this on your shelf if you have the chance to pick it up either from us or somewhere else. So yeah, it's a fun and sort of nerve wracking thing, but it's more fun than nerve wracking, to be honest.
Right. Well, Tyler, it's been great talking to you. I'm really excited about the just being a member of the club. And is there anything else you want to say? You can plug the club or say anything. Listeners are varied, but many people have vinyl or maybe thinking about having vinyl. There'll be links to your website and everything in here. But anything you want to leave us with about listening to vinyl?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, I think, first of all, I think vinyl is really important, whether you sign up for Vinyl Me Please or not. I mean, we'd love to have everybody in the world at Vinyl Me Please, but whether they do or not, you know, I think there's something very important about vinyl. I think in the same way that there's something very important about books or art, like, where it's like a particular form of art that, and by art, I mean visual art, sorry. But there's a particular form, I think there's a particular experience with that vinyl gives people with music that I think, you know, we're not against digital stuff at all. We, you know, we make playlists in RDO and Spotify for our folks every week and things like that. And we love what technology has done in a lot of ways for music. I know it's hurt it in some ways, but it's helped a ton overall. We love that stuff. And I think our sort of ethos is that we want people to add this kind of, I guess, ritual or habit for the way they listen to music every month, even if it's just one record every month. And so that's sort of why I think people should be listening to vinyl. I think there's something very particularly infectious and visceral about it that sort of becomes addicting over time. And then as far as Vinyl Me Please, I mean, we are, our goal that's up on the wall is we want to be the coolest music club that's ever been made. And we want to make all of our members' lives as awesome as we possibly can. And, you know, we've started with our physical product and we're going to keep putting more and more time and energy and money into making that even better. But, you know, we're building out all sorts of really of new stuff. Like we're starting to do events. Like you may have seen the Father John Misty, like the private show that we just threw in Chicago for like 60 people. Like that's the kind of stuff that we're going to start doing a lot more of that in an effort to make it this experience of like, I cannot believe that for $27 a month, I get all this amazing, not just music, but also access to all this amazing stuff, you know? And so that's, I think it's going to be a really, really fun ride for the next few years, at least with Vinyl Me Please. And we're really excited for everybody that's been joining and everybody also that supported us. I really am very grateful that you're a member and for your support and for having me on. I mean, I really, that means a lot. And it also means a lot that you love my writing, but it means a lot that you're supporting us and believe in what we do. We put a ton of time into it, and it means the world when we get feedback like that, that people are loving it. So I really appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome, and thanks so much for what you're doing, of course, and your company, and thanks for talking with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.